Chapter 1. The clients drawn to the quaint little law office at the corner of Main and Maple brought problems that Simon was tired of. Bankruptcies, drunk driving charges, delinquent child support, foreclosures, nickel-and-dime car wrecks, suspicious slip-and-falls, dubious claims of disabilities. The stock-in-trade of a run-of-the-mill street lawyer whose law school dreams of riches had faded so dim they were almost gone. 18 years into the grind, and Simon F. Latch, attorney and counselor, both at law, was burning out. He was weary of other people's problems. Occasionally, there was a break in the misery when an aging client needed some estate work, like an updated last will and testament. These were almost always uncomplicated matters that any first-year law student could handle, regardless of how somber Simon tried to make them. For only $250, he could write, or draft, as he preferred to say, a 3-page simple will, print it on heavy gold bond paper, get it notarized by his staff, and convey the impression that the client was executing something profound. The truth was, half of them didn't even need a will, regardless of how simple, though no lawyer in the history of American jurisprudence had ever said so to a paying client. It was also true that the $250 fee was a ripoff, because the internet was filled with free simple wills that were just as binding. It was also true that Mr. Latch would hardly touch the will. Matilda, his secretary, filled in the blanks and printed the important documents. The current client was Ms. Eleanor Barnett, age 85, a widow who lived alone in a modest suburban home she and her late second husband had purchased 10 years earlier. She had no children, though Harry Corsack, her last husband, had 2 sons from a bad first marriage, and had tried for years to convince Eleanor, his beloved second wife, to adopt the pair for various reasons, none of which appealed to her, because, as she confided to Matilda during their lengthy second phone chat, she loathed the boys. They were nothing but trouble. "And do you have a mortgage on your home?" Matilda had asked, politely interrupting the beginning of what promised to be a windy narrative about the 2 sorry sons. No, the house was paid for, as was the car. There were no debts. Harry Corsack had been quite frugal, a child of Depression-era parents, you know, and simply hated the idea of debt. Between phone calls, Matilda did her usual internet checking and learned that the home, as assessed by the county for $280,000, was indeed free of liens, and the car, a 15-year-old Lincoln, was also unencumbered. Digging a bit deeper, she found a rap sheet for Clyde Corsack, the elder of the 2 unadopted sons. Decades earlier, he had been caught peddling cocaine and spent 4 years in prison. Ms. Barnett would not discuss any more financial matters over the phone, said she'd rather wait until her meeting with Mr. Latch. She arrived promptly at 2 p.m., dressed like a mildly affluent old lady on her way to church. Matilda had seen 1,000 of them come and go, and she sized her up immediately as she poured coffee into a fine china cup she kept around for the old gals. Most clients got paper cups. Ms. Barnett walked just fine. No cane, no tottering, a good stride and nice gait. And she sat properly in a reception chair and sipped her coffee, pinky in the air, a clear sign of either good manners or a trace of snobbery. From all outward appearances, she was in good shape physically, probably had another decade to go before her new last will and testament would be called into action. After a few minutes, Matilda announced that Mr. Latch was finished with his judicial conference call and would like to see